He is the man. He is an what you would call an MMA insider. You will know him. I hear Fandango music in the background. He is the man who can set off Dana White's blood pressure with one single tweet. He is the infamous Front Row Brian. Big MMA fan, also WWE fan, just in general. We are talking with both of them right now. Pleasure to have you both on. Coach Jamie, just real quick, are you doing all right tonight?
I'm doing good, man. Absolutely. Everything's good. How are you guys doing?
I think we're pretty good. Front Row Brian, are you there, and how are you doing, sir?
Thank you for that very fine introduction, because not only do I make Dana White's blood boil, I can make anybody's blood boil.
It is Front Row Brian, people. You just follow him on Twitter, Front Row Brian. It'll only take you about one day and you'll figure out what the fuck I'm talking about here. But we are going to get into it tonight. First things first, though. Also, we do have our co-hosts, of course, Jake from the MMA Podcast.
What's up, guys?
And the Ninja. How you doing,
What's
Ninja?
Up? Good,
yep.
Brother.
Excellent. Wow. Where do we even start here? Of course, with the tough finale that happened on Saturday, I think we all watched it. It was, you know, let's just talk about the main event, I guess, is the what everyone actually is feeling out here. Uriah Hall versus Kelvin Gastelum. It was an upset. Kelvin, my man, KG, came back. He fought his ass off. He won. He beat the man that, you know, he was the total underdog. Everyone thought Uriah Hall was going to be the ultimate fighter. Coach Jamie Huey, it's all over right now as far as the tough fighters go. You were there at the finale. You know, what? You know, I've got to get your take before we even start, with our guest Front Row Brian. I just got to get your take, Jamie Huey, on the finale. What happened? You were there. Anything you can share with us? How did you feel about the results, the fights? Yeah, man, feel free just to tell us right now. Break it down.
I know, you know, for me, it was kind of, you know, it was bittersweet. I'm pretty close to both guys. I think it was perfect for a lot of reasons. I think that, everybody's underestimated, you know, Kelvin since the beginning. I don't know, man. I was extremely happy to see his moment in the sun. And, you know, I was obviously, sad for Uriah. But at the same time, I think this takes off some much needed pressure, for Uriah. I mean, I'm looking at MMA Junkie and they're talking about, you know, him fighting Anderson Silva already. And I have absolutely 1,000% confidence in Uriah, and that is a winnable fight for him. He will be a champion. But it just, you know, that's just a lot to throw on somebody, that early. So, you know, Kelvin went out and he, you know, it's funny because somebody put on Twitter recently, when are they going to quit calling Kelvin's wins upsets? Which it makes perfect sense to me, because everybody keeps, you know, the underdog, the upset artist. But the fact is, man, this kid goes out there and he knows how to win fights. He's not as, flashy as a lot of guys, but he's a grinder. And, you know, I have nothing but love for Kelvin and Uriah both. So, you know, obviously going into it, I had mixed emotions and, you know, it was hard a little bit to kind of to process it in my brain. But once the fight was over with, I was happy that both guys went out there, performed at a high level. I was happy that nobody was hurt. And I think it all kind of went a certain way for a certain reason. There may or may not be, there's always things behind the scenes that we don't know. And sometimes that may come out, but it's just one of those things, man. I'm glad both guys got out there and performed. And, you know, we're all shake hands when it's over with, man. Kelvin and Uriah were really close in the house. So it's good to see that we're all team dark side again, obviously.
Now, I do have to, after all this time, ask you a hard question. I didn't ask it before the fight, because I understand what it's like. It's like, you know, if you ask your, if you have a brother or a sister and you go up to your parents and you ask them who their favorite is, they're, you know, they're not going to tell you. So, but you know what? I'll just try you real quick, Jamie Huey. Before the fight, Kelvin Gastelum or Uriah Hall, who did you have in the fight winning? And who did you want to win in the fight, if anyone? Was it really completely 100% neutral? What's the word on the street?
You know, I can't really answer that question, but what I can say is the relationship that you saw Chael and Clayton had with Uriah, mm-hmm. It was really kind of a mentorship. It was kind of like a I don't know, they, man, it was, they were really close. Clayton is really kind of a father figure to Uriah, and Chael is very much a mentor to Uriah as well. My relationship with Uriah is that's my buddy, man. We laugh, we have the same sense of humor, we crack up. Uriah is a guy that when he came up here and trained with us, we went out and we saw a movie together, we hung out. I've spent a lot of time with him. He's what I would consider a close friend. And then as far as, Kelvin went, you know, initially he really was a guy that I think I kind of threw my arm around, from the very beginning. His demeanor, he's very, he's the, you know, I've said this before. He was the youngest guy in the house. He was the smallest guy in the house, and he was probably the least experienced guy in the house. Yeah. So initially when I got with Kelvin, I kind of thought, you know what, I felt like he needed the most help. So he was the guy really that I kind of thought, okay, this is the guy that I'm really going to want to take care of. Not because he was a favorite, because he wasn't. And, as it kind of moved along through the show, I started to see something in him that I kind of feel good about the fact that I saw that. And there was a part in the show that actually got cut, but, you know, Chael would go around after practice and he would say something specific about each fighter. And sometimes he needed to kind of slap the ego out of one guy and he needed to build up another guy. Yeah. And when he came all the way full circle to Kelvin, he says, man, he goes, I don't know what you're good at. He goes, but I don't know what you're bad at either. He goes, yep. You just know how to win fights. And he says, not a single person on this team initially believed in you. And then Chael pointed at me. He said, except for that guy, because I was, I don't know. I saw something in Kelvin, early. And so my relationship with Kelvin was different than my relationship with Uriah. I can't tell you which one I wanted to win, because I really kind of didn't want him to fight. I said the worst thing and the best thing are the same thing. And I said, and that's Uriah and Kelvin ended up in the finals. That was the best thing that could happen for both guys. And that was also the worst personally, because, you know, I was torn eternally a little bit. But but now that it's all said and done and the smoke's cleared, I couldn't be happier about how it all went, because, again, I think both guys won after that finale.
Definitely. And that's what I was going to say. I had my prediction for the Uriah Hall versus Kelvin Gastelum fight was that it would end in a draw. All right. I predicted that. And in my mind, I believe that it was a draw and it should have gone to a fourth round. I had it dead even. Fight Metric has them both landing 81 strikes on each other exactly for that fight. I believe it was a draw. I think it should have gone to the fourth. But again, like, I understand that they gave the decision to Kelvin. Wow. That is one tough son of a bitch. Hopefully we'll have the Ultimate Fighter on our show again. He's been on here twice, but he might, you know, he might just be too big now. Who knows? We'll see what happens with Kelvin. But yes.
No, that kid's got his head on right. And he's got a great core of coaches down there at Yuma United. If there's one thing I can absolutely promise you, Kelvin's not a kid that's ever going to get a swole head. At his young age, he's already the person that he's going to stay. I can definitely vouch for that.
Yeah, he might have some great coaches, but from what I saw, there was one coach who actually coached him into being the Ultimate Fighter. And he won't take credit. He'll deny it. But Coach Jamie, the living legend, Huey, you coached one of the Ultimate Fighter. You coached the Ultimate Fighter this year. So congratulations on that, man.
Well, I appreciate that. But again, I want to definitely give Yuma United credit because they're the one that got him to where he's at and on the show. So it was my pleasure to pick up the ball and take it from there. But he really has a solid his coach, Jarrell and Chase down there and the rest of those guys are he's really got a solid team. So it was an honor for me to be able to work with them the time that I was.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, Kelvin does train in the 10th Planet Jiu-Jitsu Gym out there in Yuma, Arizona. Eddie Bravo's alma mater there. So let's, without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Front Row Brian is here. Let me just say, Front Row Brian, the reason that I'm pretty new to Twitter as of like pretty much a year and a half ago. The reason I started following you on Twitter, started picking up on you was because I don't think I've ever told you or anybody else this. I came up with he had just relinquished his title to Anderson Silva at UFC 148. And so he announced that he was moving up to light heavyweight 205 division. So I just came up with a little poster there, he's going to move up to light. He's going to move up to 205, piss everyone off. I came up with a little poster there. I tweeted it to Chael. Chael sends me a direct message and tells me that I need to contact and get hooked up with Front Row Brian, which is exactly what I did. So that's how it all started, Mr. Brian. Chael Sonnen referred me to you directly. I got to ask, I never got the true story of where you came from, the origin of Front Row Brian, how it all got started. And of course, one of the Twitter questions that came in from Dorian on Twitter was, Mr. Front Row Brian, they want to know how you got into MMA in the first place. So I guess, what is the origin of Front Row Brian?
Well, how I got into MMA or how I met Chael?
How you got into MMA first, and then the Chael question is actually from someone else a little bit later. But whatever you want to talk about, if that is how you got into MMA, feel free. But yeah, what's the word on the street?
You know, I mean, growing up, I guess I was, I was in my teenage years when the UFC first came out, and I would go to Blockbuster, I would rent the movies. For the WWE, or then known as WWF, and also WCW. And I'd see the movies there. And also Dave Meltzer was writing in the Wrestling Observer about the UFC. He was one of the few people who would actually write about it. And I had gotten to the point where I was like, wow, I keep reading about it, and I need to know more about this. So I started renting some of the videos that came out. I didn't watch it live on pay-per-view. And so I guess that was, in the late 90s. But I wasn't really, a huge, huge fan. I just watched it. And then around, 2002, 2003, really became passionate about it, watching Pride Fighting Championships. And to a lesser degree, the UFC, because, they were at a low point at that point.
Yeah. So wait, what was it? Do you even remember what the first UFC event you watched on video was? Was it one?
Yeah, it was. It was UFC 1. I just rented it on VHS. And
Holy shit,
at VHS. The time, yeah, giving away my age. At the time, I didn't even think it was that great, but it was kind of a start of things.
Okay, so fast forward probably at least 10 years or something, you end up on Twitter. How did that come to be? I mean, I used to, I only started, I jumped on the Twitter bandwagon. After Chael relinquished his title at UFC 148. I'm literally that new to it. So how did you get started? And basically what I'm trying to get at is, how did you become Front Row Brian? I mean, you're notorious. Everybody in the MMA industry who's a diehard fan knows who Front Row Brian is. On Twitter, like, you'll tweet something, and all of a sudden, the person that you're actually tweeting about is responding to you directly out of nowhere. Obviously, everyone, I mean, it doesn't take an idiot to figure out that everyone follows you or at least is monitoring your tweets, man. How did it get to that point? Like, why is it that, you know, from time to time, there's a lot of backlash and controversy against you, what you tweet, when all you tweet is like, you're tweeting you're tweeting news before it breaks, or maybe news that no one knows about. You're breaking pretty much the truth, or you're stating your honest opinion. Like, how did you get to the point to where you were so well known, and the fact that you're catching so much shit?
Yeah, the way it happened was I had got a little bit of a name on the Underground Forum, and then I just switched it over onto Twitter, and I had built up some contacts, some people that I could rely on for information, started to put it out there, and I guess the big story was the Nick Diaz positive drug test, I guess a little bit over a year ago, and that's kind of what put me on the map. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the origin of it. I kind of took on this thing on the Underground and then moved over onto Twitter. And I guess to answer your other question, why I take so much flack or shit from people is I guess because, I have a strong opinion about certain things. And sometimes it's not the most popular opinion, but I'll never back down from expressing it because I really don't care who I upset.
Yeah, I hear you on that one, man. But let's check out your story, because I believe Coach Jamie Huey, I got to ask, have you ever met Mr. Front Row Brian? Yeah, I gotta. Can you vouch for him? Is he an asshole in real life? What's the word on the street?
No. Me and Brian have definitely hung out and had a few beers together on several occasions. So he's a good dude.
Yeah, that's what I thought. It's like one of those things where, for example, Chael Sonnen. He is he likes to be the bad guy in MMA or whatever, and like, really, everybody loves him, but you do have those haters that just have to come out because there's always got to be a hater, and that's what I see with Front Row Brian usually. But there are some legitimate beefs that I've seen you engage in on Twitter, Mr. Front Row Brian, and I've got to ask you about a few of those beefs. Some of them gone away, died out, but some of them are still going on, still rough. I just want to ask you about a few of them. For example, this guy, he goes by the name of Ariel Helwani. He's running some, Mickey Mouse outfit of a podcast, trying to interview people that I've already interviewed, like Kelvin and Uriah, Tommy Toholt, etc. Ariel Helwani and you, I've seen you guys go back and forth. Every now and then you guys will just disagree on something, and then you'll reach some sort of truce. But it's like one of those truths where that handshake isn't firm, if you know what I mean. And then a couple days later, you'll just be back at it again with them. What is the story? What's the word on the street, Front Row Brian, with you and the Ariel Helwani? What's up, man?
Well, I simply don't like the guy.
Yeah.
And he's bought and sold by the UFC.
Is he a shill?
Paid his tower. What's that?
Is he a shill?
Of course he is. Dana White pays his salary. There's a reason why Kevin Ioli used to be the go-to guy. He got sick of being the mark.
Mm-hmm.
And then Ariel took the ball and kept going. This guy is an absolute bum. When Chris Weidman had a problem at his house, Hurricane Sandy, okay, he shows up there for a photo opportunity.
Yep.
He doesn't help the guy. He doesn't, pull his sleeves up and start helping. His house was flooded. This bum shows up for a photo opportunity. He is the biggest piece of shit that I have met in my life. And when I met him at UFC 156 in Las Vegas, I should have spit on him, but I had a little bit more respect for myself because I didn't want to get arrested for assault.
That's true. So you have met the man. What was his demeanor towards you?
Like it always is, very smug. He, you know, he thinks he's somebody that he's not. He thinks he's part of the show. He's not part of the show. He's a clown who holds a microphone and asks condescending questions to people. And, you know, tells me that he has no respect for me. Well, guess what, buddy? I have no respect for you. I don't like you. And, you know, that's that.
Yeah, another guy that's that came at you out of nowhere. Well, actually, I was following along on this particular day. It was Dan Hardy, UFC fighter. Basically, the only thing that you actually said, you inferred that he was maybe perhaps a fake punk rocker, and that was enough for him to like challenge you, send all these little passive aggressive tweets about how he wants to meet up with you and just shake hands and have a talk. But obviously he's trying to say he's going to kick your ass. And then you countered where you actually, instead of like addressing that, you actually asked him to give you money for your time to meet him, which I thought, I laughed my ass off on that one, man. That was pretty damn good. But what's
if I'm going to do anything, I need to be paid for it. And this clown asked me for an hour of my time and to be on camera. So I didn't think it's crazy to ask for a little bit of money for my time.
Yeah. And why, was that the only time you've ever tweeted something about him, about the fake punk rocker thing? And it was a joke too. Is that the only time, or does he have a legit reason to actually like have a beef with you?
No, that's actually the only time. And we have mutual friends. But, you know, he took offense to it. But, you know, I'm happy to say that that's over with. You know, he's going through a little bit of a problem now. You know, he has the heart issue, and the UFC pulled the plug on his next fight with Matt Brown. So, you know, he's a guy that I hope that things work out for him well. And so that's a beef that's kind of gone.
Good. I hope so. His Dan Hardy, man. Yeah. Hopefully he revives his career, because the most entertaining exchange that he's had in like 4 years was with you on Twitter. Last guy I want to ask you about is, of course, the man himself, the president of the UFC, Dana White. I will just say, what's the story with you and him, if you can say anything about that?
Yeah. You know, I can't say anything bad since I joined the payroll of the UFC. he's the boss. He is he's a man that I answer to, and very happy to now be on the payroll of the UFC. And it's great.
I'm guessing that's a joke, but yes, I do understand that it is smart business to not talk shit about the president of the organization.
If you're good at something, never do it for free.
Exactly. That's not a joke.
Oh, really? Wait. You wanna break something here? Tell us a little something. What's going on here?
I just told you.
Okay. Well, then this might be something I don't even know about. Okay. So in a roundabout way, maybe you are affiliated in some way with the actual Ultimate Fighting Championship business organization.
Absolutely.
Are you willing to get into that at all? I'm not even sure.
Well, he went out. He was looking for the best, okay?
Yeah.
And he wanted the best, so he called me.
Okay. All right, excellent. We'll remain mysterious in that regard, but good to know. That would actually be badass because, you know, the impression I had was that Dana White was just hating your guts, wanted people to not even get information anywhere near you. But if he's had to change your heart and realized what the advantages are of having a person of your mindset and capability and fame, then all praise to Dana. He really is one of the best in the business.
No. That's all kayfabe. He's trying to lift a gimmick and say bad things about me. Or this or that. I'm on the payroll. It's just a gimmick. He's living kayfabe. And,
I hear you.
I think you call him boss.
Word, man. Okay, well, okay, so Dana White's cool, but I gotta ask you, man, who is not cool in the MMA world? What I'm saying is, who are the biggest assholes that you are willing to name in the MMA world and industry? Front row, Brian.
Well, I got two of them. Let me start out. Number one asshole is Nate Quarry from Portland, Oregon. This guy is the biggest fucking mark for himself. He goes around and he starts telling people, oh, Matt Lindland kicked me out of Team Quest. No, he didn't, buddy. You left because you want your picture up on the wall. You wanted a piece of the business. Even though you hadn't accomplished anything, you laid out, you know, Rich Franklin took care of you. And you, the reason that you didn't leave Team Quest because Matt kicked you out. You're done on your own issues.
Yeah. No, I hear you. Jake from the MMA podcast, who's on with us now, actually interviewed Nate Quarry. And I believe, you might be onto something because I remember the interview clearly. Nate Quarry actually stated that he was actually the one who came up with the idea and the name Team Quest. He took credit for forming Team Quest. I heard the interview. I have the clip. So, yeah, you might be onto something actually with that there.
Yeah, Google the MMA podcast Nate Quarry on YouTube. You can check that interview out.
Excellent. Now,
No. Team Quest and the internet. I'm impressed with that.
Yeah, Team Quest has kind of best year.
He's an absolute bum. He was on that abortion of a show on Spike, and I forget what it's called, but he's one of these guys that I wish nothing but the absolute worst in life for. He deserves it, and nobody in Portland, Oregon respects him worth a damn.
Oh, holy shit. Okay, all right. He's the number one asshole. Do you have any other assholes in the MMA world that you just want to name?
Oh, absolutely. The second one is Frank Trigg. He's another jerk-off, absolute clown, beats the shit out of his wife. And this is a gal, she used to date Matt Hughes, even mentioned in his autobiography. But he is the biggest piece of shit. He is a fucking clown. You know, he beat the fucking piss out of that girl. And now he's running around with some gal from HDNet. He's got five kids with five different women. Oh. You know, this is another guy who, if he was set on fire, I wouldn't piss on the guy.
I hear you, man. I don't know too much about Frank Trigg, but, wow, five kids, five different wives, beating his woman. I did hear about the beating. Does he still have a job right now? Or didn't they kick him out? Didn't they run him out?
Yeah, they had to fire him because his wife sent pictures to Andrew Simon of her beat up. Andrew Simon's the HDNet CEO.
Oh.
And somebody, either the wife or one of her friends, sent the pictures of her all beat up. And also the picture showed up on the dirty website or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, the dirty.
Yeah.
So
Wow.
it got back to Andrew Simon. And of course his boss is Mark Cuban. So they got rid of that clown. And that's why Pat Miletich started working with Michael Schiavello.
Yep. Yeah. I see Frank Trigg now doing some YouTube prediction videos on some gambling shit.
He makes about $6.50 an hour and he's a clown, a bum, and wish nothing but the absolute worst for him.
I did not know that he was getting paid for that. That's good. That's good to know. That's good to know for him. Coach Jamie Huey, kind of turning it around here. You know, obviously Brian was willing to name some names just for ridiculousness. Coach Jamie Huey. I was just wondering, who is the biggest asshole in MMA in your opinion? If you're willing to name anybody.
Wow. You know, I'm like listening to this. I had no idea. I met Brian through a mutual friend, Reese, and I just knew him as Brian. And then, he was on Twitter. Then, obviously, I heard the name Front Row Brian thrown around.
This is all, honestly, this is all new information to me. I had no idea. Yeah.
Oh, so you didn't know he was a controversial figure then?
I kind of did, but I didn't know, you know, I didn't know about his Twitter beefs and stuff. So, I mean, I don't know. Maybe I need to pay more attention to Twitter or something.
Probably. Yeah. Oh, no, you definitely got to follow this guy. Yeah, it's entertaining to say the least. And the thing is, like, it's always the truth or what everybody's thinking. That's the thing. Like, honesty, like, it's ridiculous how honesty gets censored today, but on Twitter anything goes, and that's the way I'm keeping it. But yeah, you know what, guys, let's talk about what we're all here to talk about. It's going down in 10 days, ladies and gentlemen. I'm talking about UFC 159, Chael Sonnen versus Johnny Bones Jones for the light heavyweight championship of the world, of the planet, of the soul system. It's going down in Jersey on April 27th. Now look, Front Row Brian, I'm assuming you saw the Tough Finale. They had a Chael and John Anik brought him out for a little interview there to cut a little promo for the upcoming fight. And John Jones gave the silent treatment. He was acting like, of course, the diva. He was
No. I got some news on that. Reason why he was so quiet was because he was so fucking drunk. He didn't want to give away that he was drunk. So he kept everything very low key, only a couple words at a time. He was not giving him the silent treatment. He was protecting himself because he was fucking shit faced.
I believe that, man, because when he did speak, the first time that he got the mic, he was slurring his ass off. Ivan, if you don't believe me, people, I'm not just kissing ass here. Go look up my Twitter, The Aunt Jimmy Show on Twitter. You'll see, as soon as it matches up with the timeline, as soon as John Jones spoke, I tweeted, he is slurring his words. He sounds drunk. And he did.
He absolutely slurred his speech. Absolutely. You can't deny that.
Coach Jamie Huey, can you confirm or deny this? I mean, you were there.
I wasn't present when that happened, so I didn't run into John. I didn't see him the whole time I was down there. I think he came in the day of the fight, which, you know, there could be something said for the fact that, you know, granted he didn't have two guys fighting in the finale, but there was still several guys down there that that were on his team. You know, I don't know, maybe he has his reasons, but he didn't show up until the day of the fight or the day before the fight. We were down there all week, taking care of our guys. And, you know, we touched on Uriah and Kelvin, but, you know, I mean, Jimmy fought and Luke fought and, you know, our whole team fought, except obviously for Zach, and Tor. Zach injured his leg and Thor had fought the week before that. So, you know, we were down there, you know, and even with Uriah and Kelvin, I would help Uriah with something. And then I did the mitt work with Kelvin for the open workout. And then Uriah would need something and I'd be there. And you know what I mean? So we were there for our guys. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I mean, I don't know if he was drunk or not, but I will say that I don't feel like his team. And on top of that, obviously the whole thing that went down with him and Gilbert, I thought was extremely, disrespectful, but it worked out in our favor because, Gilbert, you know, obviously he's a team dark side guy now.
Oh, yeah.
He lost a tough fight against Bubba, which John was training Bubba, to fight, Gilbert. So, you know, I mean, I don't know. It is what it is, but, if I was going to have something to say, negative about John, it would be that. But aside from that, I didn't run into John not one time the whole time I was there. I never even saw him.
Yeah. And
so what you're saying, Jamie, is he treated his fighters like he treats his gal that he's allegedly engaged to. You know, she pumps out three different kids, and only then can she get an offer to be married to the great John Jones.
Any comment, Jamie?
You know what? April 27th, we're going to punch him in his face.
Hell yeah. Now, Front Row Brian, have you ever met John Jones?
I actually did. UFC 136 when Chael fought Brian Stan.
And how did that go? Was he a jerk? Was he like, yo, what's up? Or was he cool? You know, honestly.
No, he just kind of no-sold it. And, there is no story to it.
Yeah.
So, of course, if there was, then, I'd be talking about it.
Yeah. Now, John Jones, he is tweeting. He's also tweeting shit recently about Chael being on TRT, saying he's cheating, hyping it up. Front Row Brian, what's your take on that, man? Why would he be doing that? Is he just making excuses? Is he afraid of being overpowered? He wants everybody to know, in case he goes down, that, he's just going to claim the whole cheating fucking excuse. What's your take? Why is John Jones tweeting all this shit saying it to Chael's face?
He absolutely wants that as an excuse, because he almost lost to Vitor, and Vitor was on TRT.
Mm-hmm.
Not everybody knew, and that TRT is just one thing that Vitor is on. He's on everything under the sun. Just look at the guy. He looks like I'm embarrassed. What's the guy from Rambo? He's about 87 years old. Stallone. Look at their physiques. And look at Vitor's physiques, and you can tell he's on a gimmick.
Yeah, man.
There's no doubt about it. So, I really believe that John is setting this up so when Chael takes care of business, that he has an excuse that this guy was on TRT or whatever, when the reality of it is, when you're tested as much as Chael is, you cannot manipulate your levels the way people are saying. When he gets a call, he has 2 hours to get to a testing site for him to submit blood.
Yeah.
Now, you cannot manipulate your levels in the course of a couple hours. It's impossible. And he tests within the normal range at all times, one of the most drug-tested athletes in not only MMA, the entire sport.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and you gotta wonder how that works with Vitor getting tested, and on the other side of the damn globe. Well, other side of the hemisphere, fucking in Brazil. You gotta wonder how that shady shit works. In Canada,
we know how it works.
Yeah,
there is no testing. That's Lorenzo's guy, and he's allowed to cheat. And the only fair thing to happen would be for everybody to stop fighting this guy. Freak him out like that other disgusting freak, Fallon Fox. Stop fighting this guy.
Oh, shit. You went with the disgusting freak. All right. Yeah, that is actually real quick. The Mitrione thing, man. He gets on the Ariel Hawaii show. Of course, it's like an ambush. Just like last time he was on the Mitrione Minute. He gets in trouble again. And Ariel just laughs his ass off, just collecting all those views. The Mitrione comments, actually, the Fallon Fox shit, just real quick. Do you agree? I mean, I don't think he should have gotten in trouble. That was his fucking opinion. But what's your take?
Well, of course it was his opinion. And, I don't know anything other than a disgusting freak than to describing a man who went to Thailand, had a surgery, had his cock chopped off, and now, allegedly, he is a she. I mean, what would you call that other than a disgusting freak? I don't understand it. I don't understand the outrage.
Yep.
But from what people tell me, it's a PR suspension. He's really not suspended. He'll be back, and no big deal, as it should be.
Yeah. Oh, and I wanted to actually, I was meaning to ask Coach Huey, because I'm never done with John Jones, man. I could go on all day just roasting that guy. But Jamie Huey, I was going to ask you, when was the last time that you actually saw or spoke with John Jones? Then you said you didn't see him Saturday, really, or talk to him really, like face to face. When was the last time that you actually saw John Jones? Was it when he tried to buy you off and make you his coach?
No, that happened towards the end of the season. The last time I saw John was at the Tough Gym, probably the last day, I think. last day of shooting. That was the last time I saw him. It's kind of threw me off a little bit because at the time, you know, he was very respectful. We were all, good, friends. It seemed like, I mean, we knew we were going to fight him. He knew he was going to fight us. So this bipolar thing that he's doing all of a sudden really kind of surprised me. I mean, if you're going to promote a fight, then you don't wait, a week and a half to the fight and then start talking about stuff. I mean, if this is part of his plan that, he's going to get in Chael's head and somehow, start talking smack when he's been, very, try to be friendly up until now, then, I mean, it's not going to work. You're fighting Chael Sonnen, and this guy's, got twice experience as you do in just about everything under the sun when it comes to the combat game. So, I mean, I don't know, man. Maybe it's desperation. Maybe he's nervous. I kind of keep giving John a pass because he's young, but I don't know. I thought it's kind of a crappy thing. I mean, whatever. I mean, if that's what he needs to do, then that's what he needs to do, I guess. But I can tell you, April 27th, when the bell rings, it doesn't matter because we're training. I keep saying we're, but really it's Chael, and obviously we're facilitating everything we can. But April 27th, I have nothing but confidence in what Chael's going to go out there and do. So, John can talk all he wants, but when that cage door shuts and that bell rings, then good luck.
Yep. And in all fairness, I'll say it's like John Jones doesn't know really who he is or who he wants to be. And like, I have to be fair, if I were his age with that much shit and pressure on me, who knows how I would react. I definitely wouldn't be an asshole blocking everybody on the Twitters, just like trying to diva it up, running around with hoes, this and that. I definitely wouldn't do that. I mean, but I'm saying, if someone were to do that, I'm not particularly judging them. I'm just saying I wouldn't do that, but I understand. But
are you saying that you wouldn't hire Binghamton's two finest at 5 a.m.? Is that what you're saying, or what are you saying?
It's been bugging me, man. It's just been bugging me how those two girls somehow went unnamed. You're in the car with the champion of the world. You crash into a light pole. He gets arrested for a DUI. Your name's never involved, never mentioned again. Everything smoothed over.
Press any charges or to sue him.
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah, who knows if they were? Hopefully, they weren't injured. That's actually what I do actually really hope for. That they weren't injured in that. And yeah, that is getting into, who knows what happened that night. Not even Johnny Bones Jones knows, I'm guessing.
But I have a pretty good idea what happened.
Oh, yeah.
What's the mystery? He got pretty shit-faced drunk. He hired the two finest strippers in Binghamton, New York, and he went cruising around in his $200,000 ride. That's the story.
The hottest strippers in Binghamton, New York. I've never been there.
Well, Binghamton, New York is, it's clown country, put it that way.
That's what it sounds like, man. New York is going to, they're going to wake up to something new on April 28th. That's for damn sure. But Front Row Brian, we are going to try to barrel through this quick. I know it's getting late at night here, but thank you, everyone, for your time here. I just want to really quick touch on, because I know you're a big fan of the WWE, well, professional wrestling, of course.
Now, absolutely.
Front Row Brian, if you had to choose between the UFC and professional wrestling, what is your favorite, honestly?
Well, I would go with the WWE because at least I know what I'm seeing is real.
You mean at least you know what the deal is. You know what you're buying.
Absolutely.
And they're not selling you, wolf tickets, for example.
Exactly. They're not showing me a card, you know, with 10 fights and six of them are worked. You know, I mean, WWE, you know what they're getting. They're honest. They're upfront about it. And a lot more respect for Vince than I do my new boss, Dana. But I hope he doesn't take too much offense to that.
No, I hear you, man. I'm sure you're close with Vince. What I was going to ask about the WWE is, you know, obviously it is, you know, at least they're upfront and honest that some of the, well, actually every single fight is fixed and scripted. They're honest.
I don't know about that.
Oh, really? You think there are still legitimate shoots in the WWE?
Absolutely. I haven't seen any evidence to the contrary.
I mean, Brock Lesnar can Kimura people now. It's amazing to watch.
That's the ninja.
Well, I know he's been training a lot with Comprito, and I haven't seen any evidence to suggest that, you know, some of those fights are works. You know, I don't know. Maybe you guys know better than me, but I have not seen anything like that.
I hear you. The ninja is actually probably the he is the biggest WWE fan I know, besides you, from O'Brien. Brock Lesnar returning to the WWE. Do you think he's gonna come back and dominate, or is he only there for like three shows a year, from O'Brien? Like, what's the real deal on Brock Lesnar? Is he back in the WWE, or is it just a fucking appearance scheme?
No, it's an appearance thing. You know, he's there for a few shows, and it seems to work because anytime he's on pay-per-view, the numbers seem to go up. So he does pay for his, you know, very high salary, and people like to see him, and he's back on the gear. I mean, he was at least 310 pounds, and I hadn't seen him like that in a long time.
Oh, yeah, he looks juiced to the fucking gills, man. He looked amazing last Monday Night Raw. Did you actually, props to Brock Lesnar. He bladed himself about a month ago. It was legit. He went too deep. It was awesome. He went all out. But
that was hard way, man.
You think so? it's legit strike that cut him open? Is that what you're saying?
Why would you blade in the back of the head?
Okay. You can't. The WWE's passed a no blading rule. CM Punk got huge heat for cutting himself, and so since that, I don't know. I don't know if you can actually do that in WWE anymore.
Oh yeah,
it was definitely hard way. He got cut in the back of the head. That's not where you would blade.
All right, guys. Now I know Jamie Huey is sitting there wanting to put a bullet through his head with all this wrestling talk.
No. Jamie knows about wrestling more than he's letting on.
Oh, really?
No. I don't watch WWE, although I was a big fan growing up of WWF. And true story, my little brother is actually a professional wrestler here in Portland. He's kind of got a little following locally. I am a boxing fan. That is really where, you know, I kind of grew up with. I have hardly any time to watch that anymore. In fact, I missed the Benito Dornier fight this weekend. I'm just so busy training fighters, man. I'm in the gym like 6 days a week, so to fit wrestling into that schedule would be nearly impossible.
That does
it. Coach Jamie Huey, you have to know that someday you and Shail Sonnen will run the WWE ring. You have to know this. You're the
bad
next
prediction.
Paul Heyman in
the WWE. I would gladly take an opportunity like that. I don't know what those guys make, but I imagine it's probably fairly pretty good.
Oh, man, if your brother's wrestling professionally, we definitely have to have him on the podcast. That's for damn sure.
Oh, man, you don't want that guy on the podcast. That's a militant kid right there.
Yes. No, it sounds perfect, man. This pod, the whole deal with the Word on the Street podcast is that it's supposed to be just totally ridiculous, which is why, like, it's an MMA podcast. I have the actual team, one of Chael Sonnen's coaches on, and I'm sitting here talking about WWE wrestling. And I will ask one more question about it. I will discuss it with Front Row Brian, just because, man, it's sweeping the nation. It is the odyssey known as Fandango. You know, you've obviously, from O'Brien, you followed WWE, WWF, WCW, everything. You know, all the fighters, all the eras, all the moments. This guy Fandango comes out of nowhere and is just an instant sensation. I gotta know, why do you think that is? Like, why has this guy taken off so much? Why is this gimmick playing out? I do hear that it is Vince McMahon's, like, that he actually came up with this whole spiel, the Fandango gimmick. But I want, that's what I hear. That's what I heard. But what's your take? Why is this Fandango hitting?
He came up with this type character because of Stacy Keibler. You know, she's become such a mainstream star because she's dating a drug. So I would assume that's how he, you know, what was the inspiration for it. But yeah, you're right. I mean, it is, yeah, his character, it's so over the top and it's so funny. And, you know, it's a Val Venus meets Ravishing Rude, you know, meets fill in the blank. And
Goldust.
Goldust, yeah, there you go. And, yeah, I think it's great. You know, I like, you know, the over-the-top characters. You know, not everybody has to be this, you know, mainline, you know, shoot. Because yeah, that's, you know, if that's what professional wrestling was, then, you know, people would just go to their local bingo hall. They watch WWE to see larger than life characters. And yeah. Fandango is another example of that.
You butchered his name, actually. It's Fandango. I think. I don't know. Maybe. Well,
but, you know, I actually have a funny story. You know, it reminds me a little bit of Playboy Buddy Rose, and Jamie might remember that.
Oh, no, wait, no, yeah, now, okay, now we're talking. I'm up on
yeah.
This
stuff.
I don't know this guy. Who is he?
Because he's actually from Portland, and he did some business with Matt Lemlin, and he actually ripped off Matt Lemlin. But the story, what he would do was they would announce him at, you know, 335 pounds, and he would refuse to wrestle unless they announced him at 217 pounds. And if they didn't announce him at the weight that he wanted, he wouldn't wrestle.
Holy shit, he was the original Fandango then.
Exactly, yeah.
What was his stupid name? That name was preposterous. Run it by me one more time.
Playboy Buddy Rose. He was actually in WWF. In the early 90s.
Back in the 60s, if you're
that was old school Portland wrestling. I remember that. That was it was, he had a group called the People's Army. It was him. It was a Dynamite Kid who later became one of the British Bulldogs. It was Billy Jack Haynes, and their arch enemies was called the Clan, and that was the Assassin, the guy that wore the hat, wore the old Lucha Libre mask. Rip the Crippler Oliver.
Oh no!
And there was another guy. So yeah, I'm up on that now. All of a sudden, I'm a wrestling fan. Here we go.
Portland is steeped in wrestling history.
yeah, Portland. In fact, I believe Andre Giant got a start here. If I'm correct.
Yeah, and Roddy Piper.
Yeah, I see Roddy. In fact, his son. Colt Toombs was a MMA pro and amateur fighter at the Team Quest in Gresham at one time.
Oh, nice. Oh, speaking of, yeah, sorry, we got into the People's Army and Buddy Playboy. What? Sorry, one more time. What is his fucking stupid name?
Playboy Buddy Rose.
It's so fucking stupid. All right,
you got a computer in front of you? Google it. And look at what kind of Playboy was. And
he's a legend. Legendary.
Is he still, like, knowing wrestlers, he's probably dead. Is he still alive?
Yeah, he passed away in 2005.
Okay, that sounds about right. There is a wrestler death clock. They don't seem to last very long for some reason. But speaking of wrestling, this is probably the last. Well, this might be the second to last topic about wrestling. The fact that, and I'll actually throw it in Ninja here, but CM Punk actually is an MMA fan. He appears to be a Chael Sonnen friend and fan. Actually on Saturday, we saw CM Punk at the fucking Tough Finale. They showed him on the screen. They showed his name. They promoted him. Of course, he didn't walk out with Chael like he was supposed to back in Chicago a year or two ago. But we actually finally saw CM Punk. Front row Brian, Vince McMahon had previously cock-blocked any sort of, CM Punk appearance on the UFC. But now CM Punk just did it. Do you think he did that with permission? Or do you think he's just fucking done wrestling for right now? Or do you think there's some sort of partnership going on? What's your take on that shit?
No, I don't think there's a partnership. I just, he can do what he wants. He's a big star. And, he was there with Lita. And from what I understand, Lita and him, they went out to dinner afterwards with Chael and Brittany. So, they're close friends. And I don't think Vince, would have any hard feelings about somebody, going out to dinner with a close friend.
Yeah. Now, Ninja, what's your take on the whole CM Punk showing up in the UFC? I know you're a huge WWE fan. We see CM Punk all of a sudden. You think it's a good thing or bad thing? What's your take on it, man?
I think it's a great thing, and I am glad you asked. Coach Jamie Huey, I have a question for you, sir.
Okay.
How close are we to seeing the best in the world accompany the best in the world at UFC 159? How close are we to seeing CM Punk accompany Chael Sonnen of the Ring? I mean,
in the walkout?
Have you guys talked to him?
Dana White actually approved it last night. I think one of our friends tweeted at Dana, and Dana said yes.
To CM Punk walking out with Chael Sonnen.
Yes.
Walking out. Is this going to happen, Coach? I mean, give us a scoop. Yeah. What's the word?
Man, I'm sorry to be the guy that has no information, but honestly, I've never even met him. I don't know. I don't know anything about CM Punk. I know, obviously from Twitter, that him and Chael are friends, but that's really all I could tell you.
That is my challenge for you, Coach Jamie Huey. That is my challenge from the dark side, from the Sonnen Mafia, is for you to get Vince McMahon's number, call him up, and get this okayed for the people. That is my challenge to you, sir.
I understand. My challenge is, Chael go out there and whip the crap out of John Jones on the
so we already know that.
Yeah, if there's some time in between that, then I'll see what I can do. But yeah, I don't know. I don't typically get too integrated in Chael's business dealings or whatever. But
That brings
up. I've never met him.
Yeah, that brings up two great questions for Front Row Brian. First question, do you think, honestly, there's a chance that CM Punk walks out Chael Sonnen at UFC 159, first of all?
No, because I've already tried to do that, and it was approved. It was approved in Chicago, and Vince said no. He was upset about possibly, his world champion being marginalized or being shown on TV and, not even recognized in a walkout.
But, I gotcha.
In Chicago, Chael was definitely on board with it. He wanted them there.
Yeah.
But he even took off a house show, which, is not easy. You know, when you're the biggest draw on the house show, you know, if you don't show up, they got to offer refunds.
Yep.
So he got that, I think it was in Fort Wayne, Indiana, and he got the night off, and then Vince just told him, no, you can't appear on Fox.
Now, just out of curiosity from O'Brien, have you ever met Vince McMahon?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Is he cool? What's the deal? What's the word on the street about Vince McMahon?
Vince McMahon is the greatest MMA promoter there's ever been.
MMA. Nice.
Exactly.
Interesting choice.
Pro wrestling is the building block of MMA. And if you don't think that, then you don't know what you're talking about, or you're just completely ignorant.
No, we will. Yeah, we actually, that's actually where we're going next, actually. But actually, first, I just real quick, front row, Brian, we were talking about UFC 159. I do have to get your take. Chael Sonnen is going to fight John Jones. I skipped this question, but you know, it's the obvious question. Who you got? What is your fight prediction? And will you be there at the Battle of Jersey on April 27th?
And remember, there's only one answer or one question or one answer to this question.
Okay.
I'll definitely be there. I get in Thursday, and I'm predicting a victory for the bad guy.
As we all are, I believe, on this podcast. Maybe not Jake from the MMA podcast. I don't know.
It's going to be a close fight. I still haven't made up my mind, to be honest.
Uh-huh. Well, isn't Jake the guy that likes Nate Quarry?
He is.
I mean, it speaks for itself.
He called you out, man. Now, yeah, the WWE, the last thing, is transitioning into the UFC. Look, the WWE, it is full of scripted fights and what we call works. Fixed fights. Rigged outcomes. You know, fighters making an agreement, manager making an agreement, promoter and fighter making an agreement. Sometimes the other guy doesn't even know about it. In the UFC, well, in MMA in general, I honestly believe that this happens. I believe that every professional sport or major sport where you involve money is susceptible to corruption. I believe every sport eventually, you know, in some way or another, you're going to see corruption. It involves money, and there's easy ways for people to make easy money if you're in the field, if you're in the ring. Now, you know, in the WWE, it's obviously full, it's known, it's full blown, you know, there's the secret's out, the cat's out of the bag. In the UFC, I believe, you know, I'm not saying all fights are rigged. That is certainly not the case. But sometimes I believe that a big money fight, when so much is at stake, when you have so many players, you're in this market or that market, you got this manager against that manager, this upcoming deal against this one, there's too many factors. I believe that there are some works or fixed fights in MMA and also, I dare say it, in the UFC. Front row, Brian, do you also think that maybe perhaps there have been some corrupted fights in the UFC? Do you think it goes on, or do you think we're all clean here just because it is the Ultimate Fighting Championship? What's your take?
There absolutely are works, and you know, people get the wrong idea that everyone needs to be in on it for it to be a work. That the both fighters and the referee have to be in on it, and also the judges. That's not true. There could be one person in on it, and look at Krokop. All of his fights in Japan were fake. His manager comes out and says Yuji Shimada, who's also a pro wrestling referee, would referee the matches to his benefit, and that's Krokop's manager who had a, you know, a big part in the downfall of Pride. You also look at how convenient was the timing between Griffin and Bonner 7 or 8 years ago, that they just happened to have this great fight and neither one of them got knocked out. How about Anderson Silva versus Forrest Griffin, when Anderson needed to get his heat back after an embarrassing performance against Dallas Lightsies in UFC 97. How about Kimbo versus Houston Alexander? How about Rich Franklin versus Ken Shamrock? Ken Shamrock goes down to a punch that didn't even come within the same area code of his chin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you brought up an interesting one that I hadn't. I mean, like, when I saw it, like, I didn't believe it. I bought the hype that Anderson Silva really was like a magician. That Forrest Griffin fight, where Griffin just rolls up, puts his paws up on what was basically a counter jab. I did never understand that. And then, like, I guess like a couple months ago, he comes on Air Hawaii show saying he was on Xanax. And then I was like, okay, maybe, but honestly, man, yeah, he did that when he took that. Honestly, looked like a dive, like a dive where the guy fucked up and got it wrong and made it so obvious, like it was goofy. And then, of course, he runs out. I believe, isn't that the one where he ran out the first time? He ran out immediately after losing.
Yep.
Yeah, he did the same thing against Tito, and Tito thinks the last fight, which was on the undercard of Chael versus Anderson too, Tito's on record thinking that that's a work too.
I was going to ask you, like looking back on it, it was pretty close. I remember I was watching the fight, of course, barely paying attention because of what was coming up next. But when I was watching that fight, I honestly didn't know who won the fight, just because, you know, nerves. I was so excited. I was just barely watching the fight. But, do you think Tito was onto something here? Do you think they actually rigged that one against him?
You know, I can't really say. I was with you. I was in the arena, and I was not paying attention at all. So I'd have to take a look at it again.
Yeah, I wouldn't doubt it, though. That brings me to, well, it's a related Twitter question that we got for you, Front Row. It was asking for the top five works in the UFC Zuffa-owned era. You obviously named a bunch of them. The next question that I have before, I'll just give it to Jake and the Ninja real quick, and then we'll go to the Twitter mailbag questions and close this out. Sorry, thank you for your time so far, honestly.
Yeah.
I just wanted to ask you real quick about another controversial figure that is also pretty known on Twitter and on the YouTube for his videos. His name is, you know, you think of two names, like not the outcasts, but you know what I'm saying, like the underground of MMA, as far as Twitter goes, that's for damn sure. But you know, I'm talking about Bloodstained Lane. Front Row Brian, I believe you've met him, but I just want to get it out there. Do you know Bloodstained Lane? Have you met him? What is your general opinion and impression of the man?
Yeah, I have met him. The first time I met him was when Shogun fought John Jones in New Jersey.
Yeah.
And he's a great guy, you know, and just a very nice guy. He's a free thinker. You know, some of the stuff that he thinks is a little bit outside the mainstream, just put it lightly. And not necessarily that I disagree with some of that stuff either, because some of the stuff that he says is right on target. But he is a good guy. He has a great heart, and have a lot of respect for him.
I love the guy to death, too. Hopefully he'll be on an upcoming podcast with us. But I'll turn it over to Jake from the MMA podcast, our co-host here on the Word in the Street. Jake, you are on with Front Row Brian and Coach Jamie, the living legend, Huey. If you got anything, hit them up right now. Speak your piece.
Definitely. Thanks for coming on, guys. I got a few questions for both of you. I'll start off with Jamie Huey. You know, it's 10 days out from UFC 159. How's the feeling in your camp? Are things starting to get tense? Sort of walk us through, you know, we're starting to get close to fight time. Walk us through what's going on.
It's a great camp, man. I think that, It just feels good. It feels right. It's been a grind in the sense that we've gotten the work done. But I think it's been really kind of a springboard coming off the show and then having, a lot of the guys from the Ultimate Fighter come up here and train with us. So it's, you know, John McGuire's over here, and he's obviously a smaller guy, but there's, you know, a lot of excitement in the gym. And I think everybody kind of feels that and is feeding off it. So, you know, we're excited, man. We put the work in. Shell's looking lean. He's looking ready to roll. So I couldn't be happier about it, man. I'm really excited to go out and see Chael capture this belt on the 27th.
When are you guys going to be traveling out to New Jersey?
We leave Tuesday.
All right, cool. I got a couple questions about Tough before we get to Front Row Brian. You know, obviously, Uriah Hall and Kelvin Gastelum have very, very bright futures in the UFC. But outside of those two guys, you know, we saw a hell of a lot of good performance out of the Tough cast. Thor and Luke got a couple of wins. Bubba and Clint looked really well, too, or looked really good. You have Zach Cummings, who knocked a dude out in 7 seconds, who hasn't even fought yet. Outside of Hall and Gastelum, is there any particular guy you really think of that's going to have a bright career in the UFC?
Yeah, you know, if I go down the list on our side, you know, as far as the dynamic of our team, I would tell you that Tor overall has the most diverse skill set. He was overall probably the most well-rounded guy on our team. I'm excited to see him succeed. You know, and as far as the ground game went, Jimmy Quinlan was he's a specialist, man. Yeah, you know, obviously there's some pieces that he still needs to work on. I mean, he's really only got like 4 fights now. So he's very at a high level in a very short amount of time as far as MMA. But, you know, his grappling is just on a whole nother level. On the ground, he was by far the strongest guy there. You know, and when I go back to being well-rounded, Zach Cummings is very well-rounded, very experienced. But the thing about Zach is he had the heaviest hands of anybody on our team. That kid, when I'm working the mitts with him, you feel it in your shoulders and in your joints. When he lands those shots, man, it wasn't a mistake that he knocked his guy out to get in the house. He's got dynamite in his hands. Who am I missing here? I think that's everybody. Kelvin, Uriah. Oh, Luke. You know, Luke is another guy I got to spend some time with this weekend. I stayed in his room with him, and he's still got to build up on, you know, he at the level he's at, you know, he's got there in a very short amount of time. He's only been doing MMA for, I think, 3 years, fought as an amateur for a year, and he's been a pro for 2 years. So all these guys obviously are still developing. You know, Uriah, I think he needs to get, you know, when he's around guys like Jail and Clayton, that's great for his career. And then when I go to Kelvin, it's kind of like, you know, this kid's 21 years old, man. Can you imagine? I mean, this is like a young Dan Henderson. This is like a young Randy Couture, that these guys got a late start that are still fighting up in their, I don't know what it is, 40s. Kelvin's 21. You know, the ceiling for somebody like that kid is just phenomenal. I can't wait to see what he does. And then, you know, I want to give a shout out to 2 other guys, Andy Ent, who went the distance with Uriah to get in the house, broke his arm in the first round and fought to a decision. And then a kid that I've been talking to, hopefully I get to work with in the future, Keto Andrews out of Sacramento, also fought a decision with Kelvin to get in the house. And there's tons of others, Leo Brashear, former boxer from this area. There's a lot of guys, man, that I think there's going to be some sleepers that we didn't even know that are going to pop up down the road. And that's kind of usually the way it goes. A lot of the guys that came off the Ultimate Fighter weren't necessarily the guys that won it. So I'm excited.
Yeah, you talked about Zach Cummings. He's got that corn-fed strength. When do you think we'll see him in the cage to make his UFC debut?
You know, it was heartbreaking that we had to pull him, and he didn't want to pull out of that fight. He would have hopped into the ring with one leg, but you know, we all kind of sat down and had a talk with him, and it was the right thing to do. You know, Clint's a beast, man. You saw what he did in there with that elbow. I mean, I thought he should have gotten knocked out of the night personally, but, you know, it's just one of those things, man. It wasn't anything major that happened. It was just a simple little slip and he tore his hamstring. So, you know, he's going to be fine. He's going to come back from it. And he does, exactly what you said. He's got that freakish strength. That kid hits you, it's over with. But he's got a strong, ground game too. So I would be looking for, I would be looking for him to, hopefully be making his debut. I don't know, maybe a couple months down the road, hopefully. He's going to be exciting to watch when he does go in there healthy.
For sure. Last question before we get to Front Row Brian. Kelvin Gastelum announced that he's going to be moving down to welterweight to fight the 170 pounders. Do you like that move, or do you think he should have stayed at middleweight?
No, I think it's a smart idea. One of my conversations with Kelvin in the house was, we were talking about something. I go, Kel, I go, wouldn't it be crazy, man, if you end up winning a show at 185 and you become the 185 Ultimate Fighter and then you go down to 170? And he looked me dead in the eye and he says, that's what's going to happen, coach. So, you know, yeah, he is such a little, he has so much, you know, everybody's doubting him, but there's not a single bit of doubt in Kelvin's mind. And, you know, to be honest with you, I think he's going to be amazing at 170. But you know, a guy like Mike Doce, and happy birthday to Mike. He celebrated his birthday, so I want to give him a shout out. You know, Mike's a guy that could possibly take Kelvin even down to 155. I think Kelvin's going to be a problem for anybody.
Kelvin, if you're listening, no more chicken nuggets, sucker. Go on, Jake.
Yeah, thanks again for coming on, Jamie. Brian, I have a few questions for you. We talked briefly about Nate Quarry before. We had Quarry on the MMA podcast a few months ago. I actually wasn't as aware of it as our co-host, and our co-host kind of was like, hey, you definitely got to ask about the Front Row Brian beef, see what's going on there. Quarry gave us his side of the incident, which, I mean, look, I do like Quarry, but I feel like his story had a couple facts missing from it because it just didn't make a lot of sense. He said you kind of came out of nowhere tweeting him that you were going to be basically taking his spot on the show on Spike, and then he said he went to the show's producers and they said they had no idea what you know that meant and what you were talking about. And you know, he kind of played it off at first like he didn't care much about you, but then later on the podcast, you could tell he did care, and there was definitely a little bit of a beef there. Sort of walk us through what happened with you and Nate and why there's bad blood in the air there, because I'm really genuinely interested to hear your side of it.
Yeah, Spike TV had contacted me through an intermediary that, you know, a common person that I knew. And I said that I am talking to Spike TV about taking over his position there. Because let's face it, he was horrendous. He is terrible. There's a reason why that show was canceled. He's a main reason why it was canceled, along with the other guy. What's the clown's name? The host of it.
He looked like the dude from Hannity and Combs, the Combs guy, the fish eyes or something.
Was it the guy that didn't know anything about MMA?
Right.
Whatever his name is. Yeah. Anyway, so, I mean, then he, you know, he ran to some people at Spike and started talking about me. And, you know, this guy is just an absolute clown. You know, he's a fucking mark for himself. He believes his own bullshit. He says that he got kicked out of Team Quest. Matt did not kick him out of Team Quest. His ego, he's one of these narcissistic, just low-life, degenerate pieces of shit. And I don't like him at all. I wish nothing but the worst for him. And that's about it.
For sure, for sure. Yeah, he sort of made a bizarre argument toward the latter part of the interview, saying that, you know, he trains and he's a warrior. And I think, to quote him, you know, he has said, oh, yeah, this Brian guy doesn't train and he doesn't know about mixed martial arts, which I thought was a weird angle to take because I don't train. I don't think many of our listeners train. I sort of think in trying to downplay you, he sort of downplayed everyone listening. What are your responses to him saying that, you know, you have nothing to say on the sport because you didn't fight and he did?
Yeah, well, wouldn't that rule out 99.999% of people that watch this sport?
Yeah.
I mean, how many people actually compete professionally, you know? And he said something like, I've never accomplished anything in my life. And yeah, that's kind of funny, actually. I've made a lot more money than this clown. And, you know, he's just one of these jokesters who he has no future in this game. He's awful at what he does. And, you know, if you wanted a job in this game in commentary, you know, maybe call up jail, maybe beg for charity and have him give you some pointers. Maybe you can have a little job that, you know, pays a few dollars an hour, like Frank Trigg or somebody like that. I don't know. I don't know what he could do.
$650.
All right, last question about Corey, and then I got a couple more for you before we pass it to Ninja. I haven't talked with Nate or spoken with Nate since we had him on a few months ago, but if given the opportunity, would you be willing to come on to the same podcast with Corey to sort of talk it out and quash the beef, or do you have no interest speaking with him?
Absolutely no interest in talking to him whatsoever.
Wow, strong words, strong words. You spoke recently about your Nick Diaz scoop. You sort of made your footprint onto the MMA landscape dropping that, and I actually remember when that went down. I had already been following you, and I was talking with a friend. He's like, yeah, front row Brian scooped the Diaz drug test score. I was like, what? That's awesome, I guess. But how, you know, I wondered how you got that info first, how you scooped it. Sort of tell us the story behind you being the first guy to know about and release the story about the whole Nick Diaz drug test situation.
Yeah, and that's actually one of our Twitter questions from Kyle Patrick Pillay. He wanted to know, Brian, how do you know so much news before it gets reported, and he wanted to say he's a big fan.
Yeah, you know, I can't get into exact details of how I'm tipped off on stuff, but, you know, it comes down to, you know, I tell everybody, I am a super fan. You know, this, I love this. Other than, you know, work and, you know, my personal life, this is what I enjoy following. And so I've been to like 75 of these events over the past 8 or 9 years. And during those travels, you know, you meet a lot of people, you know, and they appreciate your interest in what they do. So I've built up some people that are willing to talk to me, and they'll tip me off on some things. I don't pretend to know everything, but, you know, there are quite a few times where I have been tipped off by people that know the situation, and, you know, I don't have a big conglomerate behind me. I have a Twitter account and a cell phone.
For sure. Last question before we get to the Ninja. You briefly sort of hinted about the John Jones engagement being a work, being false. Do you have any more insight or thoughts into that?
Well, I don't know that it's a work. I believe that he actually did. My question is, you know, he says things about Chael's character, and this is a young man who has allowed this woman to pump out three babies, and only then is she worthy of his proposal for marriage.
Mm-hmm.
But he is this savior. He is a godlike figure. He's perfect. And Chael is the flawed bad guy, you know, bad for the sport, this and that. Believe me, if you knew about John Jones, you would not be a fan. If people knew about John Jones, he would have zero fans.
Pre-John, man.
Powerful. Front Row Brian, thanks a bunch for coming on. I definitely enjoyed talking with you. And as always, Jamie, the living legend, Huey, I'll pass it off to Ninja Larson. You have any questions for Jamie or Front Row Brian?
I actually do not have any more questions for these guys. These guys have things to do. I do have a comment that goes out to one of our listeners right now. Tens of thousands of people will listen to this, and I'm sure one of his cronies will listen. One of his cronies will pass this along. My comment goes out to Vince McMahon himself. Vince McMahon, we want CM Punk there at 159. Vince McMahon, I can't personally be there to talk to Chael Sonnen, but the voice of the voiceless will be there. We want him to be there to celebrate with his friend Chael Sonnen when Chael Sonnen shocks the world and becomes champion. Chael Sonnen owns this world, and he deserves the best in the world to be there with him. The second thing I have is for another great fan that's listening by the name of Johnny Bones Jones. Uh-huh. John Jones, I know you're listening to this. I know you're going to hear this. I know you're going to do your research and see what Coach Jamie Huey's going to say and try to get some last-minute work, a last-minute game plan going to try to save you from what's going to happen at UFC 159.
Say it.
John Jones, the game is already set and done. Chael Sonnen is going to come into the ring like Chael Sonnen does. He's going to do what he does best, and there is nothing you can do about it. Chael Sonnen is going to mop the floor with you, Johnny Bones Jones. Mm-hmm. John Jones says Chael doesn't have a championship character, mm-hmm. that he doesn't have a championship personality. John Jones, your new nickname is Catbox, because whatever comes out of your mouth is full of shit.
Shit. Hell yeah, the ninja there cutting a promo against Johnny Broken Yellow Bones Jones, the leprechaun himself. Thank you, Ninja. That was actually good. Yeah, UFC 159, like I said, it is now 10 days away for everybody. And we'll wrap it up real quick. This went longer than I expected. I really apologize, but I thank you, Brian and Jamie, for sticking on this long. We'll just wrap it up real quick. The fans will kill me if I don't read the quick Twitter questions they sent in. Front Row Brian, this is from Cobb Thoughts, Cobb's 6666. He wants to know, pretty basic question, Front Row Brian. Have you ever sat in the front row, or is this just a clever stage name?
Yeah, I have a few times, but it was actually the inspiration for that was Joe Nemechek. I don't know if you watch NASCAR. They call him Front Row Joe, and I was just kind of searching for a name because he would always qualify. So he'd always be in the front of the grid.
Gotcha.
So Front Row Joe, Front Row Brian, that's the origin of that.
Nice. Coach Jamie Huey, for the UFC 159 fight, are you going to be sitting somewhere in the front, or are you just going to be in the back actually cornering? I'm not sure what the deal is with UFC 1 for the big fight.
I'll be wherever they need me, man. I'll be wherever I'm asked to be at. Obviously, I'm just kind of, you know, Clayton hires his Chael's head coach. Scott McCory is his second. And then his cousin or his uncle Rudy follows him out there. Obviously, that's kind of an emotional support for Chael.
Oh, yeah.
So that's kind of the dynamic of what it is. But you know, I'll hold mitts. Whatever they need done, you know, if it's it's about Chael going out there and performing his best, and anything that me or anybody else can do to help out with that. You know, and Mike Doce obviously is a huge piece of that team as far as you know, getting Chael at weight and his energy up and everything. So, you know, whatever I need to do, man, whatever I can do, whatever I'm asked to do, that's what we're there for.
Yeah, when you're watching Chael actually fight, no matter where you are, how nervous are you going to be during the whole thing? Are you going to be able to focus, man, honestly?
You know, that's a great question. I have a really easy time in the corner when I'm cornering a fighter, mm-hmm. When I'm seconding somebody else in the corner. But to sit out in the audience sometimes and kind of watch something and you don't really have any control of it, it can be a little nerving. You know, obviously, you know, I had to go through that watching Calvin and Uriah the other day. You know, I have just complete and total confidence in Chael and his abilities, man. I mean, he's got so much character that when John makes statements like that, it really kind of, I mean, personally, it angers me to hear stuff like that because it's complete bullshit. To say he doesn't have a championship character is just a complete, and, you know, I don't want to cuss, but I think it's a bunch of shit that he would say something like that. I mean, and if anybody that wants proof, you can go back and watch the 17th season of The Ultimate Fighter, and you want to talk about character, then, you know, the cameras don't lie, John. So, you know what, man, you know, I'm not going to sit here and badmouth him. But for him to make a comment like that, I don't know. I'm kind of getting angry thinking about it. You know, what a shit thing to say.
Me too, and I believe someone else is angry. I just heard about 30 seconds ago, this is Chael Sonnen, quote directly from the man himself. He says, he's a cheater is the last refuge of sore losers, but it's good that you've already accepted your inevitable loss, John Jones. What he's saying, basically, you know, John Jones call him a cheater. Chael just responded that is the refuge of sore losers. I believe that he is making excuses. You know, it is a bunch of shit, Jamie Huey. You are right to say that. Damn you to hell, John Jones. I'm calling you out. Come on this podcast. Defend yourself anytime. Last two questions.
You know, Chael's got more character in his toenail than John has in his whole body, and I said that.
You're damn right. John Jones will be defeated. I honestly believe that in 10 days. I believe he is so unsure of himself. He doesn't know how that arm's going to react in a real fight when people aren't babying him and in sparring. He doesn't know what's really going to happen. If Chael does the right thing, it's all over easily. Last two questions for Front Row Brian before we close it out. Front Row Brian, this is coming from Dorian. She wants to know, these two questions are actually tied together, I'm guessing. Who is your favorite fighter, current and of all time? And the second question is, how did you come to know Chael Patrick Sonnen and also Overeem? How did you get to meet them? What's the deal? What's the word on the street?
Well, to answer that question, I actually got to know Chael through his childhood buddies from West Lynn.
You've been on the mean streets?
Oh, of course.
And you survived?
The last time I saw Jamie. Wow. The last time I saw Jamie was actually
we had a beer on the mean streets, and it was in an alley with a paper bag.
Gunfire.
It was bad. It was, you know, there's bullets, and but we got through it.
Wow.
People don't survive that. This is amazing.
So if you can make it out there, the West Lynn Saloon is a good place to have a beer. But
Nice.
Yeah, I actually met Chael's childhood buddies before I met him. So that's kind of how that happened. So what was the other part of the question?
She also wanted to know how you met Overeem, or if you have met Overeem.
Oh, yeah. Alistair, yeah, he's a good guy, a very nice guy. I think he gets a lot of bad slack, you know, that he's cocky or this or that. You know, to be a big-time fighter, I think you'd need a degree of cockiness. But, I became to know Alistair through Bloodstained Lane, actually.
Nice. Okay, now, actually, I lied. I do have one real last question before we wrap it up. Coach Jim Huey, don't know if we'll get to talk to you next Tuesday. Hopefully we will. I understand it's going to be a busy week. I mean, it's for all the fucking marbles, the championship, UFC 159 is coming up. Hopefully we will get to talk to you. But just for posterity, for the sake of history and MMA fans everywhere, new listeners, Team Sonnen's coach, Jamie Huey, the living legend, UFC 159, I ask this of everybody who's on my podcast. It's going to be Chael Sonnen versus John Jones for the title. How do you see the fight honestly playing out? No bullshit. And who do you got?
I see Chael winning however he decides to do it.
You're damn right.
And you know what? In the event that the universe completely shits its pants that night and something doesn't happen, Chael will still have more character in his toenail than John will in his whole bones. So, you know, as far as I'm concerned, Chael already won.
You're damn right.
Exactly.
Johnny.
That's exactly right. He said it perfect about character, and couldn't agree more.
So, Front Row Brian, you get the last word here. UFC 159, the Battle of Jersey, the battle to end all battles. Chael Sonnen versus John the Leprechaun, Broken Yellow Bones Jones. I know I asked you earlier, but just please restate your opinion here. Who do you got? How do you think the fight will honestly play out with no bullshit?
Well, Chael only knows how to fight one way. He's going to come forward. He's going to take you down. He's going to throw straight left. His game plan, everybody knows it. And I think it'll work, and there'll be another win for the bad guy.
Hell yeah. No matter what happens, I hope to have you both on again. Wow, we're coming down to it. We're fucking 10 days away, guys. This is fucking nuts. We've waited more than half a year for this.
Are you coming to New Jersey? I was meaning to ask you that.
Yeah, I was planning on doing it. I was going to get my ticket, the plane flight, and everything. Unfortunately, I'm having a fucking knee problem. I have to have fucking knee surgery. I'm literally on a damn cane right now.
Sure.
Yeah, the reason I haven't got it done is because the reason I didn't get it done in April, like, believe it or not, I'm not shitting you, is because, like, I wanted to not miss this fight. So,
is this a shoot or a kayfabe?
This is fucking for real, dude. As soon as UFC 159 is done, I'm going to schedule my fucking knee surgery and get it done. I was hoping, like, I'd be able to, like, get in enough shape to just hobble my way into the fucking arena. Didn't happen. Otherwise, I would have been there. I would have caused the UFC 159 riot that I've been tweeting about. Hopefully, I do have some plants in there. You know, it's actually now I might have to pull back on that given the the recent turn of events here. So you know what? I'll say it right now. The UFC 159 riot is officially off, guys. All right, abort mission. Do not go through with the riot. Maybe next Chael fight we'll go through with it. That's how we'll end the word in the street. Thank you, Front Row Brian, and Jamie, the living legend Huey. Just to make sure, Front Row Brian, did you have anything else that you just wanted to get out there? And how can people reach you and contact you if you even want to be bothered?
Yeah, no, I don't have really anything else to say. Just follow me on Twitter, and the people that do follow me and talk to me, I appreciate you. Even the ones that bust my balls, because I appreciate you guys too, because that's kind of what makes this fun.
Hell yeah. Jamie, the living legend Huey, how can people annoy you with questions or reach out to you for legitimate purposes?
Twitter, @Coach Jamie Huey, J-A-M-I-E-H-U-E-Y. website, www.coachjamiehealy.com. I'm also on Facebook, and we'll be out there at UFC 159 in New Jersey. So if you happen to see me, please come up, slap hands, say hi. We're all very approachable. And, man, I'm still pissed off about that character a comment. I'm gonna have to go walk around the block right now.
Hell yeah, man! Cool off, man. Throw some punches in the air. Do what you gotta do. Shadow box it out. That's awesome. Yeah. I hope I'll have Front Row Brian on, and of course Jamie the Living Legend Huey on again. But for right now, just want to sign off. Be sure to check out the MMA podcast by Jake. Yeah. Our co-host, thank you very much. And check out Ninja Larson on Twitter. Ninja, thank you very much. I'm glad you were on here. You were the WWE like hidden expert here in the midst. I'm glad we had you on. This was a perfect one for you to be on, actually.
Great up.
Yep. So everybody, thanks. I will just post this right away. I honestly can't thank you enough. Next week, hopefully, we'll have either the People's Champion himself, if time, you know, it's getting close to the fight, though. That'd be ridiculous to have him on. But I will blatantly, shamelessly ask him to come on next week. And I will also hopefully have, like I said, Front Row Brian, Jamie Huey on. But I'm going to reach out to Bloodstained Link because it's his turn next. I'm coming for you, Bloodstained. It's time for the word on the street. But everybody, thank you for coming on. This will conclude the conference call and the podcast. I will talk to you pretty soon.